tonight. It has been 2 weeks since we've talked about these hordes of demons that will come out of the bottomless pit. But we want to talk about them again tonight. We get into the part that is a description of them. I don't know whether this is a description of what demons actually look like, or whether it is some sort of body that they assume temporarily, that they may torment men upon the earth. I just don't know. That I continue to debate in my own mind. So I'll let you debate it in your mind a little bit and see if you can determine what you think about it. Matter of fact, I'd even be glad to hear what you think about it. I'm always glad to get another opinion sometime. But I am convinced that these are real creatures. They are not symbols. I have ruled that out years ago, and I've not changed my mind about that. It is amazing to me how many good men, I mean expositors, like even like Harry Arnside, a man ordinarily is pretty straight, and Brother E.G. Cook, a dear friend of mine, now deceased, but they both take the idea that these creatures are referring to heretical teachers. I don't see any way that you can take that position. Why did God take 4 verses to describe these creatures if they're not real? I mean, who ever heard of that much description of a symbol? Doesn't make any sense at all to me. So what we look at in the lesson tonight is a description of these locusts that begins there in the 7th verse and goes all the way down to about verse 11. And actually about verse 10, verse 11 talks about the king then that they have over them. But anyway, in verse 7 we have their shape, heads, and faces. And the shape of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle. Now, he didn't say they were horses, but he said they look like horses prepared to battle. Incidentally, if you want to take your Bible and mark the little word like and as down through here in this chapter, you'll be astonished at how many times it occurs. I forgot, but I've got it written down somewhere because I was astonished too how many times it says like and as, comparison like. And the shape of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle. And on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold. Now, I didn't say that were golden crowns. That's the kind the saints wear, but said they looked like the same kind of golden crowns that the saints had on back over there in chapter 4 and 5 of this book. And their faces were as the faces of men. I have an artist friend, and I'm going to try to convince him the next time I talk to him to sit down and draw these creatures. Take it right out of the Bible, and I'd like to see what one of them looks like. It'd be a hideous thing, I tell you. Now let's go back and look at some of the description that we have here. Another thing you'll note about the description that follows here, it begins at the head and moves backward, ending with a description of their tail. So he starts at the head and goes all the way to the tail then. You note here how that it says that they are like horses that are prepared unto battle. In Daniel, we read about the armies of heaven. Are these the armies of hell? They're certainly organized here in a military fashion. I told you that Joel chapter 2 speaks of this same time. We're going to compare tonight some over here in Joel chapter 2. So let's go back and look at Joel chapter 2 and compare some of the verses there with what we have here. Especially look at verse 4 and 5. The appearance of them is as the appearance of horses. And as horsemen, so shall they run. So then they can run, evidently very swiftly from what we see here. Like the noise of chariots on the top of mountains shall they leap. They have a noise in their wings that evidently sounds like a great army of military chariots coming with the horses. Like the noise of a flame of fire that devoureth the stubble as a strong people set in battle array. These are the hordes of hell. These are the armies of Satan. And they're a dreadful bunch, as we're about to see here. Now, if you look at all the information you have here, they fly like locusts, they run like horses, they sting like scorpions. Let's go on down here in Joel while we're here and look at verse 7 to 10 and put it all with what we're going to read over. They run like mighty men. They climb the wall like men of war. Note the idea of militarism comes out in every bit of this here, men of war. And they march everyone in his own ways, and they shall not break their ranks. That was one of the things about the Spartans and the Roman soldiers. They didn't break their rank. When they went out to battle, they stood their ground. That was required of them. Well, these demons out of hell, they're going to stand their ground. They're not going to break rank. It's a well-organized army. That's what I want you to see. Neither shall one thrust another. Won't be any friendly fire here. Won't be anybody getting killed because somebody was careless. They're well organized. They shall walk every one in his path. And when they fall upon the sword, they shall not be wounded. You know, in the time of the great battles of old, the kings and all of that would have what they called the immortals. Well, this is hell's immortals here. The best soldiers that he's got, he's brought them out now to fight. In other words, he's put his best in the battle array. They shall run to and fro in the city. They shall run upon the wall. They shall climb upon the houses. They shall enter in at the windows like a thief. There's no defense against these creatures. Height doesn't mean anything. You can lock the door and they'll still get in. The earth shall quake before them. The heavens shall tremble. The sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. That all gets back in to what we've had over here before in chapter 8 of this book of Revelation and all of that. I read a statement in Brother Grovet yesterday that really lingers in my mind. He says the actual size of these creatures is nowhere given. No, but it's hinted at. It's hinted at here in that they're like horses. Does that mean they are as big as a horse? That's all I can get out of that. There's so much comparison here between the horse. Can you imagine a locust-like creature that was as big as a horse? Talk about a monster. That thing would scare a fellow an inch of his life. I don't know. I'm just saying. Is that also the description here of being like horses in battle? That implies that they have armor plates on them, because the horses in that time that drove those chariots, a lot of times they had special armor on them too, because an arrow could make them fall down and the man would be killed, you know, in the chariot. So that means they got some kind of armor on, some kind of metal plates on them. And there's more about that later. But I'm going to say that they're like horses in armor, and they could be as big in size as horses. I don't know why they compare them like that. They fly like locusts. They run like horses. They sting like scorpions. Just keep that in mind. Now let's go on down and look there. Well, let me say just a little here about two other things before I leave verse 7. They're like horses prepared unto battle. In other words, it sounds like an invincible army there. Invincibility is spoken of there a bit. And then they have, as it were, crowns like gold on their head. Well, the saints have crowns of gold. So this is the devil's kings and priests, I guess if you want to call them that. This is the devil's imitation of the crowns put on the heads of the saints. Now, whether these locusts are going to cast their crowns at the devil's feet or not, I don't know, like we're going to cast ours at the feet of Christ. I have no answer to that, but I just note here that here's some more of the imitative work of the devil. Crown speaks of authority. You know, one of the descriptions of fallen angels in the Bible is principalities and powers. People that have authority, you see. So here's an army that has all kinds of commanders. Subordinate commanders. It's well organized. It's the army of hell. Turn loose on the earth. Now, they have faces as the faces of men. Now, you try to imagine a creature like that if you can. I wish my artistic ability would come back. I'd like to try to draw that. That'd be a real challenge, believe me. if you could sit down and draw that where people could visualize what it is. Now we come on down to the 8th verse, and we have the description here of their hair and teeth. And they had hair as the hair of women. So they have some sort of feminine feature there. Their hair is like the hair of women. Over there in 1 Corinthians 11, we're told that the hair is the glory of a woman. Evidently, this is the only glory that demons can have. They have hair like women. And their teeth were as the teeth of lions. I'm told that a lion has two kinds of teeth. What we call the front and the back, I guess, is a manner of speaking, but they're shaped different. Evidently, these would have both kinds of teeth like the lion. That's all I can see there. Now, we have to remember that these are not ordinary locusts, because ordinary locusts do not have any teeth or any bones. They're just a little flying insect. So they have the faces of men, and they have the hair of the women. Now, let me point out something. In the last few years, everybody, of course, remembers the Vietnam War and all these fellows wearing long hair. And you ask them why, they said they was protesting the Vietnam War. Well, the Vietnam War is over and they're still wearing the long hair, so there must be another reason. Somebody must not have quite told the truth. I have seen in the last few years on the part of men and women, in my estimation, some of the most outlandish hairdos that has ever been invented in all the history of the world, I suppose. And I can't help but believe that somewhere back behind all of this madness and hairstyle is the influence of demon spirits. And so if I were a boy, I wouldn't wear long hair because it says it's a shame. And anybody that would want to wear long hair, he would be like these creatures from hell. Because they have the faces of men and they have the hair of women. Terrible, terrible thing there to think about. Then he goes on to tell us there in verse 9 about their breastplates and wings. And they had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron. In other words, this is an impregnable army. There's nothing that will penetrate their armor. They're invincible. And the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. That's exactly what Joel said. It's the same thing that's being described there. So if these creatures are as large as I suppose, their wings must make a great deal of noise, as much noise as would a whole army of soldiers riding in chariots with horses. And small wings certainly could not create a sound like the chariots going out to battle. So, I mean, just talking about some big wings here as I see it. And after all, there would be a great deal of speed in these. That's why they can go up on the walls and then go in the windows, you know, and just go anywhere they want to. There's no way you can hold them back. And I can imagine that men will try everything in the world to get rid of these creatures. I mean, if you have a problem to arise today, like we have right now, this West Nile problem, it's here. Some of our neighbors, even one of them has it. They come up with all kinds of things to eliminate the problem. What all kinds of inventions do you think they'll come up with to try to get rid of this army? I can imagine that the insecticide people will probably do a good business. Furthermore, I imagine the military strategists will do their very best. But no matter what they do, this is an invincible army. They cannot be killed. If you stick them with a sword, they won't die, Joel said. Can you imagine an army of soldiers that cannot be killed? Not only an immortal army, as it were, but an invincible army. There's no way to defend yourself against it. You're at their mercy. So height, there's no security against them. It amazes me how demons appear in so many forms. Now later, there'll be three unclean spirits, chapter 16, verse 13, that will appear as frogs. Frogs. Remember, that's one of the plagues of Egypt. Frogs. We'll talk some more about a fly here in a little while, the fly god of Ekron. Let's go on down to look now at some other details that's given here about their tails primarily. And here's where we see that they're like the scorpions again. And they had tails like unto scorpions. And there were stings in their tails. And their power was to hurt men 5 months. Now go back and read verse 5. And to them it was given that they should not kill them. That sounds like that they would have killed them if they hadn't been prevented. But that they should be tormented 5 months, and their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he stingeth a man. Well, I didn't know we had any scorpions here in this county, but I just found out we've got some over here at Tremont. They are right here. I've never seen one of them. I'm sure they're here. But I heard about one family that's had an awful time with them right over here in our county. So they are very tormenting little creatures. And I also learned by studying the scorpion some that he is of the spider family. I didn't know that. I thought he was of some other family. But he is of the spider family. And so these creatures, they have venom in their tail. And so when they sting you, they put a charge of venom in you. Now let's look at a few other scriptures here. What they're doing, they're tormenting people. I mean, that's what it was said there in verse 5. They torment men for 5 months. I thought about how Jesus taught in Luke 11 and 12 that if you ask something of your father, he won't give you a scorpion. Well, God is going to give out a few scorpions here during the time of this tribulation period. And then I thought about a parable over here in Matthew, and I've been studying the parable some. And there's a statement that I had never paid any attention to, but all at once, it's just like a light came on in my head. I said, I know what it means. I thought about how demons torment people. Go over here to Matthew chapter 18 and look at verse 34. Now, I won't go into the parable, the details of it's not important. Just look at this one statement, verse 34. And his Lord was wroth. God is angry with men over there in Revelation. And delivered him to the tormentors. I was curious about the meaning of that in the Greek text. It can mean tormentors, just as our version has, but it also can mean inquisitioners. That was a little astonishing to me. But what were inquisitionists? They were tormentors. They afflicted bodily pain on people to try to get them to admit they were a witch or a heretic or something like that. Now, what I see in this parable is that when God casts the unsaved out and they go to hell, the demons torment them. Not only are they tormented in the flame, like the rich man was in Luke chapter 16, but these demons in hell torment them also. It'd be like going before the Spanish Inquisition. Except it's going to be the devil's Inquisition, and he's going to torment and torment and torment. The only thing is that they're going to be turned loose on the inhabitants of the earth for 5 months here. Now, I have implied in some of the former statements here that they probably would be put back in the pit after that. I don't know that there's any clear scripture that says they will. They probably will be put under some sort of restraint because there'll be evil spirits in there at the time the devil goes in there. Some people believe they remain loose the whole time, the rest of the tribulation period. That when it talks about 5 months, that's how long the sting lasts, rather than how long the creatures are loose on the earth. I don't know if it is. It's even more horrible than what I've described then. But think about people being tormented. People say, well, these trumpets and all that, they don't last long. Well, I know this one's got to last at least 5 months. Because of what's said here, May to September is the time of the locusts. So these demons are turned out to torment people on this earth. Now, they have a king, and here some very good scholars agree and disagree, but my position has always been, well, I guess the same of all the old theologians. I believe that the angel of the bottomless pit is the devil, same one in verse 1, that came as a star from heaven or an angel that fell. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit. There are some men that are convinced that this is one of the elect angels of God that is in charge of the pit and puts the devil in jail over there and later in the book. But if so, he's certainly got a strange name for one of the elect angels to follow here. I don't know why in the world he would be called by these evil names, as it were, here. They have a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon. Incidentally, that word means destruction. Abaddon is the Hebrew word for destruction. Our King James Version has a lot of verses in the book of Proverbs and other places that says destruction. It's the word Abaddon. It is literally translated what it meant. But in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. His name, that indicates that it is a real person here, not some principle or symbol that some would suppose. Let me ask the question, does ordinary locusts have a king? Well, according to the Bible, the answer is no. Go over here in the book of Proverbs, chapter 30, and verse 27. The locusts have no king, yet they go forth all of them by bands. So while they're not disorganized, they're not said to have kings. Well, this group of locusts here have king. They have a king, and so therefore they're not ordinary locusts, as anybody can see. I am convinced that this is none other than Satan. Brother John Bunyan, many, many years ago in Pilgrim's Progress, gave this title to Satan. And most of all the older scholars say that it is a reference there to Satan. But you know, the fact that he's a king, that implies that he has great power. Satan is the god of this world, the prince of the power of the air. Now, I'm going to tell you why that I believe this king is none other than the devil. Let's go over here and let Christ speak on the subject. We know that the demons have a king or they have a prince. Well, you'd assume that the angel of the bottomless pit or the king of the bottomless pit would be the prince of the bottomless pit. I wouldn't see how there could be a whole lot of difference there between that. Now, let's go and look at a few verses in the book of Matthew. In Matthew chapter 12, there's a charge made against the Lord Jesus Christ because of his miracles and all of that in verse 24. And when the Pharisees heard it, they said, "This fellow doth not cast out devils, but by Beelzebub, the prince of devils." That was really one of the names of the fly god of Ekron, according to the Old Testament, the book of Kings. Sometimes it's spelled with an L on the end instead of a B, still the same one. I believe the marginal note has it with the L here in my Bible. But now, were they speaking here about the devil or some strange creature that has a key to the bottomless pit in addition to the devil? Christ seems to use the term Satan and Beelzebub altogether. Look how it follows here. He says in verse 26, "And if Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then shall his kingdom stand?" Christ is talking here about Satan. He's not talking about some being in addition to Satan. "And if I, by Beelzebub, cast out devils, by whom do your children cast them out? Therefore they are your judges." Looking at the context, it seems to me that Christ identifies the angel of the bottomless pit as none other than Satan himself. And that's what I'm convinced of. Somebody said, "Well, why does it give his name in the Hebrew and in the Greek?" Well, the Hebrew word means destruction. The Greek word means destroyer. So one of them would seem like refer to the place, and the other one would refer more to the person. But basically, it's about the same thing when you think about it. Well, it would tell me that Hebrews and Gentiles will suffer at the hands of these demons with the exception of 144,000. They'll be exempt. Nobody else will be. Let's go back and think a little bit about this Abaddon and Apollyon and all of that. I believe that they're used here as a personification of the devil. In other words, these are just more names of the devil. That's all I see in that. Do you know anybody that is a bigger destroyer than the devil? Wouldn't you rate him about number one? I would. So he is a destroyer of souls. He is a destroyer of the human race. He is a destroyer. Satan is the prince of demons. One writer commented so well, he said, Christ saves his people from their sins, quoted Matthew 1:21, said the devil destroys his people in their sins. That's exactly what he does, too. It seems to me, though, that the Bible makes a distinction between this place of destruction, this lower part of Hades, or Sheol, as it were, that is the prison house of the demons. Now, whether there's a trap door goes up to where the unsaved are or not, I can't say. I believe there's demons in there because of the fact tormentors over there in that parable that I told you about. I think that would indicate that. But let's go back and look at some verses in the Old Testament that seems to make a distinction between Sheol and this Apollyon, or the place of destruction. Let's go, first of all, to Job chapter 26. Hell is naked before him, and that's Sheol, and destruction, and it's Abaddon. It's the Hebrew word, Abaddon hath no covering. And the fact that they're joined together there by the coordinating conjunction and would indicate that they're two different places. In other words, hell is naked before him, and Abaddon hath no covering. Remember, the word Abaddon means destruction, so all they did is just put it in. But it's that same word we have over there in the book of Revelation. Now let's go to the book of Proverbs, and we'll see two other places where I think that is true. Chapter 15, verse 11. Hell, Sheol, and destruction, Abaddon, are before the Lord. As if, again, they're two places because they're joined by the word and. It'd be like saying Sam and John. That's two individuals. So hell and destruction. Then over in chapter 27 of this same book of Proverbs, and verse 20, hell and destruction, and that's Sheol and Abaddon, are never full, so the eyes of man are never satisfied. So there's room enough in the bottomless pit. There's room enough in hell for everybody that needs to go there. That's what that verse teaches. But now let's stress the fact that this place is called the place of destruction, and the person that has the key to it is the destroyer. I think it's the devil, clearly so. You know, it's often hard in the Bible to make a distinction in some of the prophecies between Satan and the Antichrist. I believe that the Antichrist is the son of Satan. And sometimes I believe it refers to one, and sometimes it refers to the other. But have you ever thought of the number of times that they're called in the Old Testament spoiler, destroyer even? I hadn't thought about it till today. We'll spare a few of the verses, but let's look at some of them. Go to Jeremiah chapter 4 and verse 7. And note how you have these terms that keep popping up here. The lion is come up from his thicket. Remember, that's a type of the devil too. And the destroyer of the Gentiles is on his way. There's a destroyer. And he's called here the destroyer of the Gentiles. He is gone forth from his place to make thy land desolate, and thy cities shall be laid waste without an inhabitant. In other words, he's going to make conditions so bad people get out of town and hide out in the country. That's just putting it simple. Chapter 6 of the same book of Jeremiah, verse 26. O daughter of my people, girt thee with sackcloth, and wallow thyself in ashes. Make thee mourning. As for an only son, most bitter lamentation, for the spoiler shall suddenly come upon us. Spoiler. Spoiler. Now go to the book of Daniel, chapter 8. These are all descriptions of the Antichrist, or they are descriptions of wicked kings that are forerunners or types of the Antichrist. It all amounts to the same. You can apply it one way or the other, but you still come up with the same deduction. Look at verse 24. Of Daniel chapter 8 and 25. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper, and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also shall he cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. Look at that word, destroy. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without hand. All right, one other place in Daniel, over in chapter 9 and verse 26, it talks about the prince that will come, that is Antichrist, son of Satan. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. In other words, destruction. Destruction. Being ascribed there to Antichrist. Then over in the 11th chapter of Daniel, in the section there about the willful king, that is a description of Antichrist, verse 44, look what it says there. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fear to destroy and utterly make away many. So I believe that there are many scriptures about spoiler, about destroyer, and it's nothing in the world but the son of Satan, the son of Apollyon, the destroyer. Son of Satan, if you want to call him that. Very quickly, we want to look at verse 12 and we shall close. One woe is past, and behold, there comes two woes more hereafter. Now with this trumpet comes the announcement of two more woes. It's bad. It's going to get worse. So, well, if anything could be worse than turning the armies of hell loose on the earth, I don't know what it could be. Well, it's going to get worse. And each time that the trumpet sounds, the judgment is more severe than the previous one. And this is the first of the woe trumpets, and it will last at least 5 months, if not longer. The word hereafter simply means here after these things, as quite often it does in the book of Revelation. So it means that these comes one after the other like that. They're not all going on at the same time as some have supposed. There's one following the other and getting more severe as they go along. All right, that's our lesson for tonight. Let us stand and we'll sing.